The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Happy New Year, Bahamas, and welcome to The Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host, as always, Dr. Wesley Francis, who's a Bahamian general surgeon and surgical oncologist. We have a very fascinating show, as always. We have as our keynote speaker and guest, Dr., although he's very humble, he doesn't like us to mention that, Dr. Ian Fernander. Who is the longest-standing employee of the Central Bank. He's now retired. He's also a lifestyle and livelihood coach. He mentors many young persons, teaching them professionalism and the path to becoming successful in business, in the career, and in life. He's also the head of education at the Bahamas Institute of Financial Services. He's also a businessman himself, owning his own publishing company, and the list goes on and on. Welcome, Dr. Fernander, and welcome again, Dr. Wesley Francis.
All right, well, good night.
Bahamas,
and welcome, Dr. Fernander. Good to have you here.
Well, you guys got to drop this doctor thing.
Where we're talking today is a lot about mentorship and young men looking up to positive role models. And I know you're a very humble individual, but I think we need to talk about your accomplishments so that you can be a beacon of hope for a lot of young men out there. So we're going to talk about engaging and optimizing men's lifestyle and livelihood. What are some of the key facets that men, particularly young men, may wish to focus on to help secure suitable health and wealth for their individual lives? But unfortunately, I got to begin the show on a solemn note. I wish to express profound condolences to the family of my Bahamian urologist colleague, the late Dr. Darius Onwala, who unfortunately passed away after a prolonged illness at the end of December. Condolences to his wife, Rashimi, his three young children, his father, Jimmy, his mother, Stephanie, and to his brother, Jihan, and his family. Dr. Onwala and I knew each other from childhood. We attended Queens College High School at the same time. We grew up from childhood, both in St. Francis Catholic Church. We both went on to become a urologist, and we both had a lot of hardship trying to improve the urology service at Princess Margaret Hospital. Darius and I, frankly, didn't always get along, but that's comes with life. When you're a surgeon, a lot of us have type A personalities, and we're unyielding. But we both had a professional respect for each other, and I think we both pushed each other to highest heights of professionalism, and we tried to take urology to the next level in this country, and I think we succeeded on many levels, and I will carry on the torch that he started. So I found myself thinking that in life, minor feuds seem meaningless in death. The profound finality of death can provide stark perspective, making previous minor conflicts and disagreements appear trivial in the comparison to the gravity of loss. So, I mean, you can always think that obviously, the owner of McDonald's is not always going to get along with the owner of Burger King, but we both tried to provide fast food to the community. But I was happy that Dr. Darius Onwala did make peace before his untimely death, and that I was shaken after several of our patients that we shared reached out to me and remarked how many kind words Dr. Darius and Walla had in regards to me. In fact, some of them actually sent me 8-7-year-old WhatsApp messages where he said very positive things about me. And then he actually, unbeknownst to me, actually turned over several patients to me when he left the country in December 2018, saying that he thought I was the best fit for his patients, and he had the fullest confidence in me. So in life, there's no time for the trivial nonsense. We need to get beyond that, and we need to have more positivity. So let's talk about the crisis in our country that I always like to speak about, and that's the crisis of a lost generation of men in this country, Dr. Wesley Francis. We've spoken about this many times. I don't know what the answer is going to be. We'll start with you, Dr. Ian Fernando. We'll say Ian Fernando. What do you think is the problem? What are we doing wrong? Is it a lack of mentorship? Do you think that the society in itself is failing these young men? Is it the culture? Is it the fatherless society that's the main culprit?
Boy, I think that it is complicated, which is part of the reason why it has been so difficult to resolve it. But the problem itself has so many pieces that I think if you try to focus on one thing, you can miss the problem. I want to highlight a couple of the pieces that I see. Let's start with the whole issue of fatherlessness. So I'm in my 60s, I'm in my mid-60s. I grew up in the Bahamas where, in my humble opinion, there was a lot more fatherlessness in that Bahamas than there is today. What I think has changed in the Bahamas over the many years is that there is an increase in motherlessness. So, for example, even homes where there was a father, many of the fathers of yesteryear were taught that their role was to take care of the house, bring in the money, make sure people ate, make sure the kids were fed. Outside of that, there was not a lot of engagement between many fathers and their kids. There were many, many, many single parent homes back in the day. I dare say I don't think it was anything less or more than it is today. What is missing, I think, what has changed is the level of engagement of our mothers.
Very well said, and very intriguing to think about. I believe fatherlessness is one of the worst and yet most invisible epidemics of Bahamian culture. But I'll ask you this, Dr. Wesley Francis, what is worse, a fatherless home or a home where a father is present? He's alcoholic, he's an abuser, he's demeaning to the mother, the wife, he's physically and emotionally either absent or abusive to the children. Which you think has a more profound negative impact? Obviously, they're both tragedies.
Well, obviously, you know, your environment shapes you. And I think children are imitators of what they see. And if you grow up in a home where there's abuse, there's, no safety. There's a term that, you know, we always use, psychological safety. There's no emotional support. Then, you know, you tend to somewhat mirror the behaviors that you actually see and you grow up seeing, right? So, you know, I'd like to delve more into this fatherlessness versus motherlessness that our guests brought up here, right? Because when you talk about fatherlessness in the past, I think what I gather from that is a father being present, that doesn't mean that that father is actually involved. And there's some more of an emotional component to that, and not more of a, you know, breadwinner kind of situation. So it takes more than a provider to raise a child. And I think still to this day, we think of fathers, okay, you're the breadwinner. You provide. You make sure that there's financial stability, that there's a roof over the head, there's food. sort of you provide for those basic needs. But then children and also wives have an emotional need. And I wonder, the term that you say fatherlessness, does it encompass that part, the emotional aspect that that is lacking, even though the provision aspect is there?
Yep, most definitely. Which is why I center on the thought that maybe what we're missing today is not fathers so much, because I would like to think that many of our fathers who are providers today are different from the fathers of yesteryear, and that they are also emotional supporters. They're also engaged in the day-to-day lives of their kids. So one of the differences that I see is that there's been a step back in the engagement of the mother in the usual role, where the mother back in the day knew that she had to wrap her hands around everything to do with the child. She could not expect support from anywhere else, because it wasn't the man's duty to do that stuff. He was doing what he did, or he did not exist. Today, the man exists or he doesn't exist, but I believe a part of what is happening is that our women are more disengaged from the traditional immersement in child rearing that we had before. The setting of ambitions for their sons and daughters, the daily. I'll give you an example. My mother did not go past grade 2 because she was the eldest of 15. I went to St. Anne's on a scholarship, and I used to come home with trigonometry homework, biology, chemistry, physics. And my mother would say, hey, let me see your homework. And she would sit and she would go through my homework. That's engagement. My father never did that.
Right.
My mother, who did not go past grade 2, had me believe that she was so interested in my success, I had no clue that she should not have been able to be going through my trig homework, but she did.
So let me ask you a question, because you speak then of the motherlessness. Is it that, you know, women have advanced significantly, and women are in, you know, make up 50%, even maybe more of the workforce now. Women are succeeding far more than men in professional lives. Do you think then that, you know, this whole concept of motherlessness is that the women are now becoming more of the providers?
Yes.
And therefore, the role of the nurturer.
No one's doing it. No one's doing it. And the grandmothers and the aunts and the neighbors, I mean, if we have any such thing left anymore in this country, these persons have also disappeared into their busy lives that they probably did not have decades ago when persons like me were growing up.
Don't you think it has a lot to do with economics? We are one of the 10 most expensive, NASA, New Providence, one of the 10 most expensive cities in the world to try and survive. And when you have a typical single mother with 3, 4, 5 children working 2 jobs, there's only so much she can do. She has to be out of the house by dawn. She's going to come home in the night hours, completely exhausted, just trying to make ends meet. And what she might be providing in terms of love is providing money for those school fees, trying to get you shoes, paying for books, paying for school uniforms, etc. And yesteryear, even if you had an emotionally absent father, they were taught from their fathers, from their grandfathers, to show love by providing. At least that provided the opportunity for the mothers to not be the primary breadwinner, yes, and be ever present emotionally and invested in the lives of their children. So although the father may not have been there, he allowed the mother to be there.
Yeah, now, very, very good point.
We don't have that. So the mothers are struggling.
Yes.
And there are too many, I know the numbers are shown that statistics, are too many teenage pregnancies. So there are too many children having children who don't even have the ability or the comprehensive skills to even raise a child.
Right.
And that also is not as new as we make it sound. Back in the day, teenagers had kids. In fact, the normal age for getting married and starting to have kids was very young compared to what we do today.
Yep.
The difference was when a teenager, 17, 18, 19, whatever the age is, had a kid, they were rallied around by a community. And we seem to have gotten away from the concept that a community is responsible for the lives of people in it.
The bigger problem is that we're having more and more men fail in life. And those, we always discuss it because it's a major issue that's affecting the future of this country. There's so much in the way of brain drain. So the best, the brightest, the most successful, those that we've nurtured and we've found profound success, never come home. Most of my colleagues who have children in college, university, they'll all say, I can think of one who's not said, my kids are not coming home. And they are the best and the brightest. So even when we have success stories, they're short-lived because they're not coming back to enrich our future and our society. How can we address that brain drain?
I think we as a society have to raise our children to understand that this is their place where they have to make their mark. Instead, I think in many cases we have individualized success and says you need to be a successful person, as opposed to inculcating in our kids that the pinnacle of success is if you can impact this country and this society.
Absolutely.
And not enough of that is being done. Understandably, because people want their kids to do well, and there is a feeling that if the best opportunity is where you push your child, as opposed to saying to them, look, disregard the realities of the world and come home and see success in the Bahamas and make a difference here. I don't think that message is cute for our day, unfortunately.
No, that is very true. I mean, because it's about capacity building. I think the way that you attract, the diaspora back home is for them basically to be able to have something to come home to. For them to have something to come home to, we need to develop industries. Many of the things that we enjoy, for example, in North America, and I think I always say that, we benefit from being close to North America, but sometimes that's a two-edged sword, right? We still lack a lot of fundamental industries that people can come back home to work and to further develop. And as you said, if we don't further develop and create capacity here, then those kids that have gone off, there's nothing really to come back to. And we see that a lot in healthcare. yes, a lot of physicians they go to medical school and they come back home. But one of the things that we lack also a lot of technicians. Because you know, we don't have those industries that those technicians can come back to work in and develop that. And those are very lucrative jobs.
Yes. I think one of the things that we have to do some more work on, and especially the way we've grown up as a nation, is to convince our younger persons, and it's something that I'm involved in that, wait a minute, whatever your skills are, whatever your talents are, you do not have to be your best only if you are employed. What about you being the person that creates the job? What about you being, whether you're a technician, health technician, or whatever your skills are, what about you stepping out and saying, I am going to be a business? I give you an example. Guy gets shipwrecked off South Beach, swims ashore without even a shirt on his back. In this country, guess what he's doing in a day or two? He's making money. He doesn't know the language, doesn't have any equipment, doesn't have a big-time education. But not only is he making money, he is making more than minimum wage. Sometimes he's making minimum wage in a day. He grabs a cutlass and he's willing to go and be a business and stop in this person's yard, say, let me do some work, give me $80 for an hour. Go in the next person, and so in 3 hours, this person has made $240.
But I think that's a bigger problem that we're looking at. Where is the dedication to our craft, whatever career we or job we have? Where is the worth of the work ethic? When you go and look at innumerable construction sites, who are the hardest working persons on those sites? 90% of the time, it's the foreigner.
Yeah. So how do we fix that? How do we get a culture where our young men in particular, because we don't have a huge problem with our young women with this, where our young men understand that, hey, if I really apply myself to whatever I am good at, whatever that is, whatever you call it, if I really apply myself and push myself and not sit down and say, I've got to go somewhere where someone pays me some money for my time, I can probably do well in this country. If I'm a technician, I come back and it says, you know, I'm an X-ray technician, so I am going to treat my life as a business, as opposed to say, I need a job. I'm going to create this sector called medical technician, and I'm going to sell that. But we're taught in our educational system that you get educated, you get a piece of paper, and you wait for someone to employ you. And if that doesn't happen, you're useless. And I think that's one of the things that we might be able to work on.
But I think it's also a serious and terrible indictment in our society where so many young men would rather deal with racism of the United States than come back to the unwelcome environment of their own people. And they'll rather be in Minnesota in the freezing cold and be called and this and that and everything else and feel more peace and a clearer path to success than coming back here and dealing with the politics and all the senior persons will eat their own young and everything else. It's not a very welcome environment. So, I mean, I'm guilty of it myself. I have relatives, cousins who... My brother is a gastroenterologist. My cousin's a critical care specialist and pulmonologist. My other cousin's an anesthesiologist. Another one's a child psychiatrist. And the list goes on and on. And all of them at one point have asked me, do I think they should come back home? And unfortunately, because of what I went through when I came back, I love them. I don't want them to see them go through what I went through. Maybe if the environment changed, I would say, all right, I see the environment has changed. But it's hostile. It's hostile. I've said it before, when I was in Hamburg, Germany, and I was the only person of color in the hospital who was a surgeon, the only other persons of color were the cleaners. And every time I went to the hospital, security would stop me because they didn't believe a doctor could have my hue. I felt more welcome in that environment. because they respected me for my intelligence, my skill, and everything else, and what I contributed to that hospital. Then when I came back to Princess Margaret Hospital, where I was born. And that's a serious indictment on this society and the culture of this society.
So we've just identified a key problem for Bahamian men, in particular women, I guess, as well. But we're talking about men tonight. And it's how do we overcome our culture of violence towards men? And let's not skirt it. This culture is violent towards men. I'm just gonna leave it as the culture is violent towards men.
And I think it's more, we're not just talking about physical, we're talking about demeaning.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about negative.
I mean violence in all of its forms. Not just physical violence. And I honestly believe that our culture of violence towards men, starting with young boys, is a part of what contributes to this soup in men where they feel that, hey, to express myself, I have to rely on violence because that's what has been expressed to me. So you have a young boy in primary school who does something wrong. Guess what the reaction to that young man is? Even if he's in a Christian school, they don't pull him aside and say, young man, what happened? How did this happen to you? Let's pray together. Let's try to recover you from this thing that you have done wrong. You know what is likely to happen to that young man? He is going to get a reaction of violence from the system that he's in. And it's going to be said, you did this. What must be done in response to whatever you've done is only one thing. We're going to be violent to you.
But in our country, the color of your skin has no meaning. It's not going to cause you to be oppressed.
No.
When we talk about racism, particularly in this new environment of the United States, you are a second-class citizen. You are always under siege. But there are so many successful Bahamian men who would rather deal with that, tolerate that, than to come back home. So we need to really look at, and Dr. Devon Curling was on the show many months ago, and he said, we actually need to actively recruit. We need to find out where every Bahamian man and woman, we're talking about men today, is in the world. What are they specializing in? What are they training for? What skills can they bring back? And we need to make a plea for them to come back. Make it an inviting environment for them to come back so that we can build industries, so that we can advance medicine in this country, so that we can advance technological pursuits in this country. But we don't do that. We just throw our hands up in the air and you say, you know what? I'm happy to see that the valedictorian for this and this school is actually a male. It's a wonderful accomplishment that you don't see very often. And then you look 8-10 years later, he never sees the Bahamas again, other than maybe visit his mother every 3-4 years.
Yeah. But, you know, those are some valid points. But here's the thing, right? We're still a very young nation. Capacity building is not easy. And it requires you to have some level of commitment, some level of resilience. The first guy going through always gets his nose bloodied. So you have to have a pioneer mentality. The person who's doing the heavy lifting, it's not always easy. And hence, perhaps in our culture, and I think what you were talking about there, in whatever it is that you do, you can still be an entrepreneur. And entrepreneurs actually create wealth for people, for themselves, and also builds industries. But it's not easy, right? But some people, like some of the people that you would say, they're more comfortable going into an already made situation where you don't have to be a pioneer. You just, you know, express what, you know, or function the way you were trained. Like a lot of us who trained in the U.S. came back home. When you come back home, you have to be able to adapt. Will we ever get to that level? Yeah, maybe, right? But it takes somewhat of an investment. And usually when you're in that investment phase, you don't get returns. Returns are later. So you have to be the individual or the person that understand that, you know, like the farmer has to plant and he has to go through the seasons before he gets to the harvest. You can't, when you're in the U.S., yeah, you start at the harvest from the beginning, right? You just go into that. But so people, I think, have to be more resilient and recognize that to come home, you have to build. And it's not going to be easy.
Well, let me give an example. You talked about a Bahamian male nurse in Canada, a Bahamian male teacher in Canada who may be making $110,000, $95,000. To ask him to come back to this society where it's so expensive to just exist, where even if they get married and marry someone, another teacher or another nurse, they may never in their lifetime be able to afford a home. They'll never be able to attain a status beyond lower middle class. It's difficult to ask somebody to tolerate that and then deal with the violence in the schools, the burden of trying to teach 45 students where five of them, the students don't even speak English, et cetera, lack of resources, everything else, where you can get premium health care, you can get, there's less crime, there's less chaos, you can start your life.
So that's an easy life. You go.
Correct.
It's easy. I mean, you choose that. Or you choose to come home and help to be part of the building of the capacity.
The change.
And be the change that you want to see. Right? I mean, that's a common phrase that people say, right? But for you to come home, you have to be the one to, you have to learn that and understand that if the industry is not here, you have to develop the industry. I always think you go abroad, you learn. The only way things change at home is when you go elsewhere, you get the tools, the resources, and you learn, and then you bring it back and build it. Yeah. But
I think it's
that,
more complex.
That's hard.
I'll pose this question to you, Dr. Ian Fernander, as a person who is a lifestyle and livelihood coach, and you try to instill values in young men as they enter business and their careers and everything else. It's exceedingly difficult to start a business in this country. Mm-hmm. There's so many, just to open a bank account is such an arduous task in this country that it's ridiculous. I remember I was going to a bank when I first came back, and to open up a business account, they wanted so much. They wanted me to talk about who are my rivals in terms of in my profession. And it was just so many ridiculous things.
It's insane.
I just, you know what? I said, you know what? I'm not even, I gave up and I went to another bank.
Yeah.
And it happens all the time.
Yeah, it happens all the time. In fact, something as simple as a bank saying to a young person who is 23 years old, I can't talk to you unless you give me a bill from a utility company. So where do I get a bill from a utility company when I just came out of college and I've been living with my parents all my life and I still live with them? And so you can't get an account because you don't have a bill from a utility company. It's incredible the barriers that young people, even older people, face to get going. But to your question, you have to list these barriers and then find a way to overcome them. So, for instance, while you may not be able to get, it takes months, years, or never to get an account set up in the Bahamas, I've known young persons jump on a plane, whether it's legal or not, go to Florida, and within 20 minutes, have a bank account with a debit card and leave Florida that same day and come back home. They have an account. everything's in place. And this person is not an American, they're Bahamian. So the idea is that you need to have an account. So if you can't get it at home or until you can get it at home, jump on a plane, spend a couple of dollars and get one in the States. So that's certainly one of the things that some of my advisees have had to do, because they would not have been able to set up an account.
And that's just taking money out the country. So even when you're successful, the money goes out the country. There's no insight, foresight for creating obstacles for young men and women to start up businesses, because that can be a ripple effect and provide hundreds of jobs for other young men and women. We'll talk about this and more on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks.
Cora, I look funny all black up yesterday.
But she says she bumped into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I land up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how does this work?
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone, so nobody can know what you saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host Dr. Wesley Francis, who is a Bahamian surgical oncologist. And we are pleased to have Dr. Ian Fernander, who is a retired central banker and also the head of education at the Bahamas Institute of Financial Services. He also runs a publishing company and he's also a lifestyle and livelihood coach. So we're, as many times in the past, we're trying to save a generation of men. And something must be done to break the cycle of death and murder and incarceration. And I believe mentorship is a crucial element often missing in the lives of far too many at-risk Bahamian men and young boys. So a positive mentor could be the crucial divide between life and death for a young boy, a teenager, or even a young man. But even as we age, the need for a mentor never ends. I have mentors who are critical in my life, who have had profound positive effects on my life and provide me with strength and critical guidance. And it doesn't necessarily need to be someone who's much older than me. I have my own counterparts, my own colleagues who are my age who have inspired me, including Dr. Francis. He doesn't like me to say that, but including Dr. Francis. So we all need someone as a guiding light, someone to take us through the dark times, someone who's been through the hard times, to give us strength and to show us a way to get through it. So I'm a firm believer that you cannot teach what you do not know. So how can we provide mentorship to others when you don't believe in yourself, when you don't have any positivity in your life, where you never had a mentor yourself? And that's the state of affairs for so many men out there, even if they're fathers, that they don't know how to mentor their own children, not to mention the boys in the church, the boys in the community, the young men in their business, et cetera, et cetera. How do we change that?
I think a part of that answer lies in spiritualism, or having a spiritual reckoning, because that does give us the opportunity to understand that no matter how wrong something may be, how wrong a situation may be, that there is a way to be saved from it. The philosophy behind a lot of religion talks about being saved. And I believe what's missing in the lives of many of our men today is not having an association enough with the with that spiritual realm, and understanding how to fill the gap between being lost and being saved. However you want to define that, Christianity or whatever brand of Christianity, whatever religion, I think that that is something that's also missing to a larger extent today from the lives of young men than, I mean, when I was a kid, I had to go to church. I went to a Christian school. I mean, you were surrounded by this spirituality that I think is not, there's not enough of it in our lives today. And that is definitely a help for how you think about, this is wrong. I grew up in an abusive home. I have no mentors, but I understand that wrong has to be made right.
So I think even you can be successful in life if you have a belief in God, you have a spirituality, that you have God as a guiding light, that you want to do better, you want to reach the kingdom of heaven and the afterlife, et cetera, et cetera. I'll go back to the Bible. It will say, I will be a father to the fatherless, and you will be my sons and daughters. That's 2 Corinthians 6:18. So fathers are instrumental in our lives. And if we don't have a father, we at least we need to have a mother or a grandmother. Dr. Francis, you are very humble, just like Dr. Ian Fernando. But I'll emphasize that it's very important that we highlight the success that you've had, particularly coming from Second Street, the Grove. You've overcome overwhelming odds. Do you think you would be where you are now if you didn't have mentors?
No, I would not. I mean, you know, I had a community that invested in who I am today. And, you know, I always say that I had my primary family, but then there was an extended family. There was community. There was non-blood family that also participated in my upbringing. I also did, you know, had that grounding in spirituality also. I think you always have to have something that at least tells you what is right and what is wrong. To have an understanding or some sort of emotional understanding of, you know, how to keep yourself, or what is saved, as our guests have said, being saved and lost. I had a lot of people in schools, the educators, your father being one of them, who inspired me, you know, who helped me along the way. I have a mentor. I had mentors when I came back home. Dwayne Sands is one of my mentors. I always say that. He encouraged me. He pushed me, but he didn't push me, and he wasn't lenient with me. I would even say sometimes it was violent, right? But not violent, was good, because you know you saw that. Listen, you know, get your life together, do the right thing. I mean, you know, focus on this, give you the guidance. And guidance is important. and then obviously when I went off, I had a lot of mentors there. And those mentors I still have today. Mentorship is a continuous thing. It's not, you know, you have one today and then that's it. And it's important in everybody's life. I think kids, children, young adults, they always want some form of belongingness and affirmation. And belongingness and affirmation sometimes is viewed as love. And that is, I think, what allows you to grow. And that's the nurturing that most kids need. And if that's absent, then you start to see, you look for that belongingness and affirmation from somewhere. And this is where, if you find it in a gang, it's gang culture. Is it really about belongingness and affirmation and love? Because young men, they feel like they belong there. And they are affirmed by the group. And so you could see how you can continue down that road. But then you continue down that road, especially if you don't have that spirituality or that spiritual upbringing, because you know that you are participating in what should be wrongdoing, but yet it affirms you, and you feel like you belong, but it's wrong. But yet you get the love from that, and I think that just continues.
I had a mentor in the form of Professor Magnus Ekaditi, a well-known neurosurgeon who's been here 30 years.
You have a mentor because he's still here.
Yeah, he's still here. Well, I was just saying in terms of what got me to that point, to tell me you got to do urology. There's a glaring need for urology. You got to be this. You got to treat every patient like your family. You got to have spirituality. You got to put God first. You got to put family first. Yeah, he was a wonderful father. I wanted to emulate to be with him. I remember when I visited him, just when I finished and I saw his neighborhood in Southeast, I said, you know what? I'm so inspired. One day I'm going to be your neighbor. And within a year, I became his neighbor. Yeah. So you always need somebody to push you, somebody to guide you, someone to go through the hardship and show that they succeeded and you can believe that you can do the same. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
A pleasure. Good evening, Dr. Pinto.
Good evening. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and Dr. Francis and Dr.
Fernando, yes.
Great job as usual, Dr. Pinto. And I know you've got a really good guest today.
The best.
Dr. Fernanda.
Yes.
He mentioned something, but he mentioned the fact that we have motherless homes and I think that that was very loaded, and I know that that came from deep, because, you know, and let me just mention this out on the outset, what has taken place in our society just did not happen. Remember, we had about 100 plus persons in the early 70s. 100 plus thousand people, and then it grows every 10 years. And then we had an opportunity to plan what is taking place in our country, in our family islands. What we didn't do was plan properly. And herein is what we are dealing with, and you're trying to deal with, and the public, which is good, because we need to find the solution and find what we need to do. Yes, and of course, we have a lot of mothers who don't have the time. And I call them females, because mother knows how to care and love and protect their children. They don't have the time, and some don't even know how to, because they came from a broken system. And then you're talking about young men in our country. If you have a traumatized mother, and that's the only source of support, and then you don't have a supportive extension of the family and the community, what do you expect to happen? You have a traumatized boy and girl, and we missed what Dr. Fernanda says over years, we point to boys, but most of these boys and males came from single mother's home, mother home. And you notice that most of these males, because I don't call them men, they're undeveloped. They have the emotion of a female. Every time you talk to them, they're very sensitive because they didn't grow up with a man. Not every home that have a single mother did not grow up properly. But if you have that in, let's say, 70%, 60%+, the majority of these issues that we have in our country, you'll find that not that some two-parent home don't have some issues, but you'll find that most of these individuals, and I speak from time to time at the Boys Industrial School and other schools and other forums, you find that most of these young males, they grew up with their grandparents and great-grandparents, and even their parents not even around. Their mothers are not around. And then we try to put the blame on boys, and we don't realize that boys are affected by the environment, and I think you all alluded to that earlier.
But don't you think, sir, sorry to interrupt, don't you think that abusive, negative father in the home is worse than no father whatsoever?
You said it.
I'm asking your opinion. If you have an alcoholic father who is a womanizer and physically and emotionally abusive to the children, is a gambling addict, and
yes.
That is far-reaching and provides more negativity within that growing young man's mind than I think not having a father.
Yeah, no, I agree. But let me mention to you, majority of our homes are run by females.
Yes, maybe 70-80%.
Yeah, so we got to focus on the majority of what is taking place in our society to fix our society.
Well, I think it's even far-reaching. I think there's so, generation after generation, women are raising their daughters to be so independent, to not rely on any man, to believe that, you know what, men are no good, never trust them, never give them your heart, never enter the sanctity of marriage because they're always going to break your heart. And if you're raised from a young girl through preteen, teenage, as a young woman, that's all your mother, your aunts, your grandmother has told you, and they are perfect examples of men letting them down and being destructive forces in their life, then we're ending up with a society where marriage is becoming less and less common. Successful marriages are becoming less and less common. So the nuclear family is an endangered species in this country.
Absolutely, because the mothers and the people in that home are traumatized. So trauma leads to more trauma.
Exactly.
So we need to recognize what it is. And Dr. Fernanda, man, you open up a whole box of of issues that we need to deal with. And from that perspective, we need to move forward. And, of course, we have a lot of good single parents who raise their children properly, get them involved in wholesome activities and Boys Brigade and the Scouts and of course, and take them to church and that sort of thing. But in our wider society, we need more positive role models. In our wider society, within our communities, in the church, and then, of course, in our community and businesses, and even in government, children look at what they see in our society. And that's how they form their opinion about their lives.
What is your opinion, sir, in regards to brain drain? So as we spoke about earlier, the best and brightest young men in our Bahamian young men are not coming home.
Well, let me explain why I believe, from a minute standpoint, from my viewpoint, is that if you come home and you need a connection because you have education and you qualify to get a job and then somebody else gets it because they have a connection. And that is consistent and been consistent for decades. Why would somebody who have education and have opportunities elsewhere, why would they want to come back to be frustrated? And then, you know what frustration leads to? It leads to going to people like yourself, like you and Dr. Francis, doctors, and it causes stress and causes ailments. Nobody wants that. No one needs that. Our society needs more peace and people who run in our country who have the heart for leading people in peace and with a godly attitude. That's what we need. We need people in our society who are leading, setting proper example. Until we have that, we can have the same thing. You know what Einstein said? You keep on doing the same thing, expecting different results. That's insanity.
Very much so, yes.
We try to fix something, then we don't want to address the issues that exist. And I want to just thank Dr. Fernanda for opening that box. That is deep.
That's where we need to head.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your talk and your responses. I'll let you respond, Dr. Fernanda. What are we talking about, this motherless society? And
yeah, so I think we have kind of beaten that a bit. But the importance of that is to move away as far as we can from the concept that the only thing that is wrong is men. Something's wrong with the men. You can't fix a problem if you haven't defined it properly. And I do honestly believe a part of defining the problem of what's happening with men is to acknowledge that it's just not fatherlessness, it's motherlessness. And motherlessness doesn't mean a home without a mother. It means a home, as Dr. Pinto has said, that is besieged by the pressures of economics, by the pressures of not having support systems that we used to have back in the day, of not being groomed to be a mother. Back in the day, it was pretty much what a schooling for a female was that you were born and being taught how to become a mother. And I think a lot of that has been thrown out the window. Dr. Pinto mentioned that, hey, you're here to be an independent person. You're here to be equal to everybody else and not to be set underfoot. So the system of guiding you to motherhood, a lot of that is being thrown out the window, and certainly the support system for motherhood. So while we examine the problem of men, let's not disregard the impact of womanhood in that. Another part of it, too, is that a lot of men are put on the straight and narrow by having good women in their lives.
Correct.
A lot of men who are successful would not be successful if they did not have an ambitious, really disciplined and directed, and a woman who wanted to have a family and who wanted you to succeed as a man in order for her to be comfortable. A lot of our young men are not running into women like that anymore, that are saying, hey, if you're going to talk to me, I need you to not be some rich guy. I need you to have a future. I need you to have discipline. I need you to have character and so forth and so on. That's gone out of the window.
But there are far too many women who want everything instantly. They don't want to go up and
it's impossible.
The difficult journey along the way. They don't want to go up the mountain with that young man with potential.
Right.
So that's why they'll go for the drug dealer, because right out of dropping out of high school, they're rich. What's the future of being with a drug dealer? And we see so many I'm sure you see it as well, Dr. Francis. So many educated women from good families have their MBAs, work in financial institutions. They work in the hotels. They are the pillar of success. And who are their boyfriends? Their boyfriends drop them to work in their car. And then they go off and they gallivant and they smoke weed and they check this woman and check that woman and they might drop the lunch off to this woman. And why are these women who are intelligent in every other way choosing the worst possible men to have children with? They know that the man who has five kids for five different women is not the one you want to have your first child with. But they will go and do it. And then they'll continue that cycle. And they'll continue that cycle. That's also a glaring problem. That might be a little bit controversial. Obviously, you talk about when you get married, you want to be equally yoked and everything else. It's not about education. I have some of the greatest respect for blue-collar workers in our society. Some of the men who are creative with their hands, whether it's architect or a plumber or electrician or a mason or someone who drives drywalling or whatever they do, if they show excellence and they can build something out of nothing, they do very well. They do better than most
persons professionals,
who have postgraduate degrees.
Yes.
And they're well sought out. They're well respected. Everybody in the highest echelons of society know them and respect them. I'm talking about men who are going nowhere in their life and women who are, I've known physicians who are dating men who are on bail for armed robbery. I don't understand it. And then they want to have, be a woman on the side in their 20s for this married man, that married man, because it provides the finances that they want and the car payment is made and the jewelry is bought and the trips to this and that. And then by the time they're nearly 35, they see, where are all the good men? And then this man in this small society is going to accept this woman with all this baggage and negative past and everything else. You got to be a good woman to find a good man.
And to make a good man.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just say, you know what? I'm nearing 35 and I'm going to be renewed.
Yeah.
Your past is still with you, particularly in this small society.
There are not many good men who don't have a good woman as a part of their makeup.
Well, I would be nothing if it wasn't for my wife. She was with me when I had to wake up 2 o'clock in the morning to make me coffee when I had to study for year after year after year, where I had not $1, where I had to get money from her to get gas. Yep. That's the support. So she was with me when I had nothing. Now that I have something, she deserves every part of it. But too many women here, they want everything instantly. They want you only. I have friends who would approach women and good men, good intentions. And they were told, you're not a consultant yet. Come back and check me when you're a consultant. And then when these men go off and marry a foreigner and come back, these same women will say, well, why can't they give a Bahamian woman a chance? You had your chance, but you wanted instant gratification and you wanted everything right there and right then. You wanted to be at the top of the mountain without going on the journey to go up there.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of dysfunction in our society that has to be brought out so that it can be fixed. So it's really good that we're pointing to some of them. It's not a simple linear problem. Yeah. It's one of those complex issues.
Multifactorial. Absolutely. Yes,
definitely.
So where do we start? Obviously, we can't just throw our hands up in the air and you say our society is doomed. Where do we start? Obviously, we have to start on multiple levels, and it's going to take all of us as a community to come and make a change. But we cannot continue to allow things to go downhill. We're peering over a precipice, and we have to find a way to get back to the old days of success. So you've been a wonderful guest, and we've only touched the surface of your great knowledge. I would openly ask you to come back. I know you're a very busy man. You're open.
I actually enjoyed it. So
you're welcome next week, the week after, whenever you can. I'm going to be trying to get you to come back next week. Dr. Francis, we've said a lot. What are your closing remarks and thoughts?
You know, we just have to support each other, and I think that's where we start.
More love, less hate.
More love. Absolutely.
Definitely.
It ain't that serious to be, you know, all of these crazy things that we do. It ain't that serious.
Closing remarks, yeah. Dr. Fernando.
Well, understanding, one, that no problem is linear, that it has all sorts of tiny little pieces that need to be pulled out bit by bit and each examined for its own veracity and tackled by itself, as opposed to saying, oh, the problem is single-parent homes. Oh, the problem is this or that or the next. The problem is so many things that we have to start off by saying we want to be willing to rip the problem into its little pieces and examine everyone to see if we can bring solutions to it. That's one of the things I'd like to see. The other thing that I'd like to say is that we have to change the paradigm of convincing our young men that they are worthless.
Mm-hmm. Amen there.
Even if you get a D in school, you're not worthless.
Everybody has value.
There's something that we have to do in our culture to have every young man and every person understand that you are valuable and you can make value with whoever you are and whatever you have.
Okay, so it sounds like part two next week,
yeah,
Dr. Fernando.
Like part two.
Let's be good to each other. Life is not promised to any of us, as I've felt and experienced with the death of my colleague, Dr. Doris Nwala, who was at the height of his success. Live every day like it's your last. And have a safe week, Bahamas. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. With early detection comes early prevention.